When you open up Facebook, what do you see? A bunch of mom photos yesterday, Mother's Day. You see photos of people's kids and links to articles that your friends want you to read, political rants from your cousin. Here is what you hopefully do not see.
Pornography, gratuitous violence, animal abuse, people abusing each other, physical fights, child abuse, sexual abuse, gory, gross-out material.
And the reason you don't see that stuff? Moderators. People who spend their days looking for objectionable images and videos and keeping them off your social media feeds. Sarah Roberts has been studying site moderation for years. She's an assistant professor of information studies at UCLA, and she's heard stories about what being continually exposed to disturbing material does to a person. Stories like what happened to this moderator.
He described to me how he'd been home one night sitting with his partner, his spouse, and they were entering into a moment of intimacy. His partner approached him and got close to him physically, and suddenly he kind of pushed his arms out and pushed her away. It was startling to both of them, I think. And when she asked for him to kind of explain what was going on or what had happened, he had a flash in his mind of something he had seen at work that was really disturbing to him. And the last thing he wanted to do was share it with his partner in an intimate moment. And yet there he was, kind of blocked from being close to her.
It makes me wonder, what's worse, being traumatized by those images or being numb?
Yeah, I mean, I think this is kind of the frightening endgame for this work. Certainly, there are people who can do it long term. I was on another program once, and a gentleman called in and indicated that he'd been doing that work for 6 years in a call center in Iowa and felt he was good at it and felt he wasn't really having any serious repercussions in his own life. And really, you know, I'm in no position to take issue with that. But I do know that other people indicated that they were really reaching the point of desensitization, not really shocked or surprised much by anything. And the outcome for those people was really one of actually feeling quite jaded about the nature of the human beings that walk among us every day. You know, they would say things to me like, I feel like I know dirty little secrets about the people who pass me who are strangers on the street.
Of course, the USA is, we're the center of a lot of these platforms, but I understand a big chunk of the people who do this content moderating, going through this all this appalling stuff, they're not in the United States.
There's a certain percentage, probably a fairly large percentage, of that workforce that indeed is contracted labor. And a lot of those labor pools are in places other than the United States for multiple reasons, the least of which is the relative low cost of the labor vis-a-vis American workers. So we see a lot of this kind of work in the call center-like environments of places like the Philippines, which also benefits from having a large and young workforce and many, many people who have very, very strong colloquial American English skills and a sense of American popular culture, which all of which goes to being a successful moderator when you're moderating for an American platform.
So on top of being psychically terrorizing, this job is also really low paid.
You know, the pay varies so greatly depending on where you are in the world. Right in your own backyard in Seattle, we have a case of two workers who have filed suit against Microsoft. And it's an interesting case because those workers, unlike the vast amount of contract laborers who are out there doing this work, those workers were full-on Microsoft employees. And what we've learned about them through sort of the lawsuit filing and other information is that they were actually fairly well-paid workers. Nevertheless, these two workers allege that they are completely disabled with symptoms that appear to be post-traumatic stress disorder. So I'm not so sure that even a decent salary and benefits would necessarily offset or mitigate the kind of damage they're alleging.
I guess there's no way we can train computers to do this job, huh?
I think there's a great desire on the part of firms to introduce AI and machine learning technologies more and more to this practice. Certainly that would help deal with the issue of worker harm that comes into play here. But even introducing that at scope and scale, I think is somewhat far off, just given the magnitude of the problem in terms of the amount of content generated. I mean, these are actually highly complex processes that we're talking about that call on some of the most human cognitive functions that are out there. And so as of yet, all of those functions have not been able to be accurately and precisely ported over into like a machine learning algorithm.
So these content moderators, they see something terrible, abusive, and they flag it to be taken from the site. But do they ever get the satisfaction of knowing that they've brought somebody to justice or helped a victim that they've seen?
One worker who worked in Silicon Valley at a major firm described to me the case that they often received reports of videos of users of the platform expressing suicidal ideation or either wishes to self-harm or actually engaging in self-harm. And the worker that I spoke to about that case explained to me that sometimes when they were able to figure out where the user was or figure out kind of triangulate information about the person enough to get law enforcement involved, they might be able to have law enforcement go do a welfare check or otherwise intervene on a person in danger. And there was often jubilation on the team when they learned that, in fact, they had intervened and perhaps saved someone's life. And I think when we talk about what kinds of things could help workers, that sense that, you know, the work that they do isn't throwaway or isn't useless, but that maybe has made a difference, that some intervention has taken place. When I've spoken to workers in the Philippines, they never had a sense for whatever happened, if anything, when they would flag material or content as abusive or problematic. All of which goes to, again, like the opaque nature of the way these practices are undertaken and meted out. Not only does the general public, by and large, not have a sense of these cases until one of them sort of slips through the cracks and becomes a public spectacle and there's outcry around it. But it may be that the workers themselves within the firm have very little sense of what happens. A lot of time there's an analogy made between content moderators and law enforcement. But of course, there's a gulf of difference between people in the law enforcement community whose work is recognized and understood and is venerated in many quarters, who have support systems and who have the means to follow up on such things, versus people who labor in the shadows, who don't have access to these particular channels and whose work is really unknown. And I think that's a source of frustration for many workers.
Sarah Roberts studies social media site moderation at UCLA, and the problem just continues. A man was murdered on Facebook Live recently, you might have heard, and then Facebook announced it would hire 3,000 more of these moderators, bringing the total to 7,500. This past weekend, a man in Tennessee used Facebook Live to stream his suicide, setting himself on fire. The problem of social media bringing you the world, including parts of the world you just don't want to see, continues. You're listening to KUOW 94.9 Seattle News and Information.